not a panic button. We're just, we're recording now.
Anybody gonna be here from the department? You know, like Mike or somebody? Oh, two glasses of you're telling me. I'm sorry. Should I get you not listening? Okay, we're gonna call this meeting to order. Except further instructions.
Joy, you
don't I don't know him by memory. I'm ready to pass it on, but not quite. Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order, and I'm going to read these very long instructions first before we get into the meat of the meeting. So good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners meeting for today, Monday, June the 17th, and we are starting at 1:15. If you wish to become more involved in the Neighborhood Council system and are not on our mailing list, please sign up at the table in the back on the kiosk. You can also sign up on your phone by texting commission to 555-888. During the meeting today, we will discuss the items listed on the meeting agenda in numerical order, unless I receive a request from a board member to take an item out of order. Copies of the agenda and related documents are available for you on the table in the back. If any board member has a conflict of interest at the time an agenda item is announced for discussion, the board member should identify the general nature of the conflict, indicate that he or she is recusing him or herself from participating in the matter, and leave the room during the duration of the discussion of the item. Before we make a decision on any item, members of the public will have an opportunity to provide comments on the item under consideration. Members of the public who wish to speak on multiple agenda items shall be allowed to speak for a total of 5 minutes per meeting, and may allocate time in one-minute increments per item when the agenda item is called, or they may speak during the multiple agenda item comment period for 5 minutes on multiple agenda items. Does that make sense? Never mind. If you have a general comment on an item that is not listed on the agenda, you may provide your comment during the public comments portion of the meeting. Public comment should be directed to the board rather than to individuals. Please understand there are applicable laws that limit the actions we may take during today's meeting. Thus, we may be legally prohibited from acting on a concern that you have expressed. However, your concern may become the topic of discussion at a future board meeting after we have had the chance to list the item on the agenda. Should you wish to comment at this meeting, please fill out an electronic speaker request on the speaker card kiosk for each agenda item you wish to address so that you may be heard. You will be called by me when it is your turn to speak. Please be sure to place the number of the agenda item you wish to speak about on the speaker request form. Speaker requests may be filled out using the speaker card kiosk, again located on the table in the back, or by texting the commission to 555-888, or via our website, empowerla.org, commission policies and meetings. If you intend to speak on any item, you must submit your electronic speaker request prior to the start of the meeting or prior to the call of that item. When a person is speaking, they are entitled to courtesy and respect. Please refrain from any other discussion in the room. If you wish to chat, please take that discussion outside while our meeting is in session. We treat one another with respect. That means we act with civility and decorum. Competing viewpoints may be articulated without the need for inappropriate or uncivil actions. Last but not least, please switch your cell phone ringers to vibrate or silence. Thank you very much. We will call the roll. Here.
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 Commissioner Bo Ramirez?
Here.
We have forum?
Sorry, we have quorum.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to item number three, which is the approval of the minutes from Monday, June the 4th. If everyone has read them, do I have a motion to accept the minutes from Tuesday, June the 4th?
I move that we accept the minutes.
It's been moved by Commissioner Lippman. A second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Commissioner Bo Ramirez. Okay. All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Hands up. Hands up. Okay. Thank you. Okay. I am assuming, as usual, John, that we have received no community impact statements from any neighborhood council?
I have not seen it.
No? Is there anyone here in the audience who would like to speak on the multiple agenda items that I mentioned before where you can speak about the whole agenda and you could do it all at once? No? Or wait until and we can do it item by item? All right. Okay. Number six, any representatives from the city here? Number seven is an item we always have on here. Any updates or anything from the Council of Budget Advocates?
I'm Brian Allen with the Neighborhood Council of Budget Advocates, and while there isn't much to speak on because we're in the end of our season, we are having Budget Day on the 29th of June, and we would love to see everybody there, and anybody else that is interested, we'd like to see them there. There will be some people who will be elected new budget advocates, and there will be probably close to half that are going to be continuing for one more year. And I haven't been here in the last few months, but the budget advocates have rolled over one more year, those that are continuing, in order to get the voting for budget advocates on off years, because as of the 29th, there will still be some NCs that do not have a seated board or elected budget reps, and that is a little bit difficult because it's only the budget reps that can vote for budget advocates. So we've chosen to move one more year into the future to have elections, and at that point, we will not be in conflict with any neighborhood council elections. With that, I'll take any questions if you have them.
So it's going to be the same setup, morning session, and then they break out into the regions?
Yes.
And then,
yes,
then they
will
all meet together for the budget advocate meeting? Okay. So even though they're extending the budget advocate's terms, there are some new people that still have to be elected?
There will probably be about half, yes.
Half of them?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Does anyone have any question of the Commissioner Lippman?
Anybody else? Okay. Do you want to go first?
Just in general, in some years you've asked us to serve particular functions. Is there anything in particular you'd like us to do on that day or just show up and...
Unfortunately, I was under the impression that everyone on the board at BONC had already been communicated with, or it had been communicated to you that you were welcome to be there. The assignments for the breakouts have already been provided, I believe, but I would love to say, everyone is invited and I would love to see everyone at a breakout session. It would be a very good idea. I think it would be beneficial and helpful on both sides.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Mr. Lippman.
I was in I was in two communities in South LA this past 2 weeks, in Watts and in Mid-City. And I heard feedback about the budget advocates from folks in those communities. And they basically told me that they're not showing up to it anymore because they feel that their community is not being heard not in the 29th, but in the meetings that are being had with key leaders in the city, sort of the smaller meetings where you're going and meeting with the general manager or the chief administrative officer or the city clerk and the mayor's office. And so they've decided to either resign their position or not show up anymore. And so I understand, I think geographic diversity, and this has come up before with Slank and some of the folks. I understand, I mean, obviously we want some geographic diversity because we represent the whole city, but I think there's a real opportunity, particularly with the diversity of the city, to include communities that have not been equitably represented at the table. I'm speaking about LGBTQ+ communities. I'm speaking about, obviously, people of color. I'm speaking about younger folks as well. But I feel like there's a need to ensure that their voices are heard because they're telling me that they feel disenfranchised.
I'm not sure what I'm hearing here because there are, as you know, there are 99 neighborhood councils. There are 12 regions. And each region has 3 budget advocates. They are all selected from the councils that are within the region. If those people come to budget day, they have the opportunity. They're the representatives, the budget reps. And as you know, the budget reps are those two individuals who are selected by the neighborhood council, or if they don't select someone, it is the president and the treasurer. If they don't show up at budget day, they cannot participate because they're not there. But we have not rejected anybody. We have there's nothing that has been said, done, or enforced that eliminates anybody of any council from participating. So I don't really understand the comment that they would make, and I'd love to follow it forward.
I think that isn't the flaw in the system. What I think is the challenge is, so the budget reps meet on budget day, and they vote for, I don't know what the name, the advocates, right? The advocates. And what I'm hearing is that the folks who are the advocates, who then get to then meet with leaders in the city, are not representative of the city. And so I think there's an opportunity to at least consider the idea that you may elect people at large who represent particular communities because they're not being heard at that table or they're not being elected by the budget reps.
The budget reps,
right,
may only vote for another budget rep. There is no one that can be a budget advocate that hasn't been selected or assumed to be a budget rep.
I understand.
So it comes from the neighborhood council budget reps. Those reps may be board members, or if the board decides to select a person to be a rep that is not a board member, that is also okay, but they do represent that board. The challenge that the budget advocates have had, and I'm saying this because I have been there for 3+ years now. The challenge has been internally, and this is a little bit of dirty laundry, is to be available to the budget, to the neighborhood councils. We have not done a very good job of going out to the budget, to the neighborhood councils at their meetings and communicating with them. And we are pushing on that very hard. And this next year, we're going to push even harder. But that's one flaw that we are working on. But all budget reps are invited to the table at every meeting if they want to come, if they want to join by phone. And they are also invited to attend all the meetings that we have. If they're interested in the city clerk, they may attend those meetings that we have there. Now, we're also pushing the last couple of years, and I personally have been pushing, to get the budget advocates embedded in both the CAO and the mayor's budget team. We haven't been successful in that. We have been rejected for the most part, and we want very much to get involved in that area as well. But we have been making progress, and we are more involved than we have been before, but it is a hard-fought battle, and we don't get the support that we would like to have from the city itself. We do from the departments.
Commissioner Atkinson, just a kind of a quick aside, because I understand your point, and I have to look at it from my own area, which is South Central LA, and because I go to the budget advocate to the meetings every year when they choose the budget advocates, and I'm not quite sure where the responsibility is. It seems to me that it's on neighborhood councils to elect their reps, and then for the reps to come together and elect their advocate. And it's really hard. I've been to so many of the meetings, and it's really hard to get reps. It's really hard to get the neighborhood councils to concentrate on that issue that they need to send their reps from their neighborhood council. And it's not that they're being pushed back or not allowed to participate. It's finding a time, or maybe they're overwhelmed by other issues of a neighborhood council. I'm not quite sure. But it seems to me the opportunity is always there, and I'm like begging people every year to be a budget rep so they can at least pick a budget advocate. And so then you get just enough budget reps there, and then nobody wants to be a budget advocate because that means you got to go to more meetings. So it's a hard situation, but I think it's not the department, or it's not the budget advocate program per se, but the neighborhood councils have a certain responsibility if it's an issue that they're really interested in. So if any of them say, I don't know anything about the budget, I don't know anything about the budget advocates, then we need to find out what's happening with those budget reps and what's happening with the advocates in the first place for not getting back to their reps and to their neighborhood councils. And so we need to maybe...
It is an ongoing battle.
The advocates need to figure out a program of better participation.
It is an ongoing battle that all budget advocates have, trying to get the NCs to support us in providing people to come to our meetings. It has been. It continues to be. I know that in Region 2, which is where I'm from, we go out to every single one of those meetings. Some budget advocate, and we're down to only two at this point, we go out to every single one of them. And as you probably know, Glenn Bailey and I are both represent Region 2. But we travel to more than just Region 2. We go to a number of different NCs, and I've been going over the hill lately. So we're trying to get the word out. We're trying to get the support of the NCs and recognize that you have a voice to play in this, and we would love to have your voice be given to us. We ask every NC to go out to their constituents and get questions. We ask the stakeholders that are at meetings if they have questions. And this is a very difficult area. Nobody wants to step up to the table and voice their opinion.
There's one thing I learned, Mr. Allen, being on this commission. I learned it quick about the budget advocates. Are very independent. They don't listen to anybody. So we don't have any jurisdiction over policy, and they made that real clear to us. The department makes that real clear, and we can offer all kinds of suggestions on what to do to make it better, and you don't have to do a doggone thing about it. But I think budgeting is real important, so therefore when I come to I go to budget advocate to the meetings every year so that I can go to my region and be sure that they're represented. And then they say they'll do it, and then, you know, they don't do it. But after I do that, it's up to the budget advocates to figure out something.
I will also say that the budget advocates this year are going to have a change in leadership. Both the co-chairs are stepping down, and there will be new co-chairs, and the leadership will change.
We should have a rotation like we do.
You may voice that opinion. We'd love to have that opinion.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Yeah, just
Commissioner Wiebe.
One thought that occurs to me is that it may be, you know, to all of our advantage to encourage in the entire board of neighborhood councils to attend the general meeting, because it is a marvelous tutorial on how the city operates, whether one is the advocate or the president or the treasurer, in hopes that the following year someone may become interested in becoming an advocate or a rep. Just food for thought.
I'd like to make one quick suggestion. I know that we're have folks from CD Tech Public Allies who have been working to.
I'm sorry.
I know we have representatives from CD Tech and Public Allies who would be coming up later, and they worked on a contract to identify and reach out to segments of the community that are not currently inadequately represented in the neighborhood council system, including but not limited to intersectional folks who identify as working class, people of color, LGBTQIA+, opportunity youth, homeless and formerly homeless, formerly incarcerated and transition age youth. I'm hoping that the invitation to budget advocates can please go out to the folks who are engaged as part of this engagement process, because I think it's really critical that they are at the table, maybe not as budget reps or advocates, but at least part of this process, because I think it's critical that those folks who are underrepresented are part of the budget process.
I'm sure that the budget advocates would very much entertain any thoughts and any comments with regards to the budget from any place. We have not limited ourselves to any specific criteria in that respect. And I can speak for myself for sure, but I believe that the rest of the budget advocates would take the same position.
Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, item number 8 on the agenda is general public comment for any item on this agenda. And you have, is it 2 minutes? Is it 2 minutes? And it's 2 minute remarks for general public comment. And I don't have the thingy. The kiosk.
For the timer?
Oh, you have it.
Oh.
You can come up and say whatever you would like.
Right. Yes. But you said for agenda items, it can be anything related to the...
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I made an error and said that it was public comment regarding the agenda. I'm sorry. It's not. It's public comment regarding any topic that is important to you. Sorry about that. 1111. I didn't slide it.
Super secure.
See, I'm
okay.
Learning.
Super secure.
I'm the least technology proficient here, but I know how to find the
okay.
Speakers. And this is item number 8.
8. Okay, we have Gary Fordyce, we have Dave Brown, and we have Lydia Grant. So.
Okay, so Gary, you're up first. I have one prerogative. I'd like to give Mr. Fortas 3 minutes. I believe I had that prerogative.
You have to give everybody 3 minutes. You just give everybody 3 minutes.
Is it against the rules is what I want to know.
Give everybody 3 minutes.
Pardon me?
You give him 3 minutes and you have to give everybody 3 minutes.
This is a particular subject, though.
This is general comment. It's general comment. So everybody gets 3 or everybody gets 2. Standard is 2. And as president, if you want to do 3 for public comment, you have to give to everybody.
How many general public comments are there?
3.
How many?
3.
3 for this subject?
Yes.
All right, then they get 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you. Gary Fordyce, commissioners. Shirley Dabbitt became a candidate, was elected on May 4, was sworn in, and is currently seated on the North Hills West Neighborhood Council Board. To date, I cannot find evidence of the legal public existence of the Kingdom Reality LA Church. There is evidence the church shall launch on September 15 of this year, yet the Secretary of State states there are no results found. There is no public phone number, no scheduled church services to date. Shirley Dabbitt failed to provide evidence of significant and ongoing participation in a church with no evidence to date of existence, legality, nor public recognition. The city clerk failed to vet the candidate adequately, refused to accept a California Public Records Act on frivolous claims, and refused to follow the North Hills West Neighborhood Council bylaws. Shirley and her husband both filled out a voter registration form claiming to be employed at 9229 Haskell Avenue. No mention was made of their form that 9229 is in fact Monroe High School. Shirley Dabbitt's document to the city clerk, filled out and signed by her husband, Samir Dabbitt, claimed to meet at Monroe High School, yet did not mention 9229 Haskell. In fact, Monroe High School and 9229 Haskell do not appear together on any document and are in fact the same location. LAUSD is currently working on another California Public Records Act to provide evidence of past, present, or future permits and/or lease application/license agreements. In closing, the city clerk's office did not do their responsibility to adhere to the election handbook, properly vet candidates, and support reasonable California Public Records Act inquiries. In fact, it appears the primary effort was to approve candidates under any guise and claim successful elections while dismissing a majority of challenges. Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't see the timer.
I don't see it either. Thank you. I'm going to have some questions about this, but I'll wait for the general manager's report. It's a general question on elections that I don't understand. All right. Public comment. Who's next?
Dave Brown.
Good afternoon, Dave Brown representing North Hills West Neighborhood Council, and there's two parts to this. I'll be as efficient as I can. A good number of folks from Greater Valley Glen Neighborhood Council could not make it today, and they asked me to read this on their behalf. Good afternoon. Unfortunately, we cannot make it today. However, we are requesting Dave Brown, myself, read these words to you and to also request that you agendize this topic at a future meeting. Sonia Inzukian is the owner of 14011 Archwood Street in Valley Glen, which is a CLHF, a Consolidated Living Health Facility, currently attempting to get a conditional use permit approved to increase their facility from 6 beds, which they're entitled to by right, to 12 beds. Ms. Inzukian's representative is Benjamin Fisk from Pacific Zoning, LLC. Many in our neighborhood believe that there needs to be an independent investigation done on the Ezekians and Fisk's business dealings and potential fraudulent activity in relation to their CLHFs. We believe that the integrity of the single-family neighborhoods are at risk when facilities of this size are conducting business there. Our neighborhood collected nearly 200 signed petitions opposing the 12-bed expansion. Also, the Greater Valley Glen Council officially opposed this expansion. The Planning Commission on May 23rd, that being the Zoning Planning Commission, postpone their decision for 2 months so that the applicant can come up with a revised plan and so that neighbors and the applicant can discuss matters. Lastly, residents from the neighborhood in Valley Glen believe that it is important that different neighbor councils meet and exchange information on this topic to ensure that there is an evaluation done on the zoning variance procedure so that our neighborhoods will be protected. Including that table of contents, here is a complete file of documentation, including North Hills West original agenda, approved minutes, transcript of following public comments, Greater Valley Glen approved minutes, subsequent transcript of comments. All these recordings are routinely readily available. Basically, what happened in a nutshell is a then current board member of North Hills West went to a zoning commission and basically lied. So we would like to request a formal investigation into this matter because one person in one develop, and it's the same developer for three different locations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to receive this or?
Does this go, the request for investigation into, does this go to the city attorney? I mean, it doesn't go to us. To that, to the department.
Give to the department.
So it's on zoning, so the department.
Other areas in our office,
the
other issues.
Building and safety.
Advise the neighborhood councils and the commission. Perhaps.
We don't investigate.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I'm Lydia Grant, and I am on Sunland Tagus Neighborhood Council. I'm not speaking on behalf of the council. I'm speaking on behalf of a couple of issues. One I'd like to bring up, piggybacking on what two others have said. One, budget advocates. Budget advocates picks its budget representatives from its own neighbor councils, and then budget advocates are chosen out of those budget representatives. There are the same amount of budget advocates for every single region in the city of Los Angeles, and those budget advocates get to volunteer for whatever jobs they'd like to do. So if neighborhoods are feeling like they're not represented, it's because they're not stepping up to volunteer. I'm just going to lay it out. I've been to these meetings. I know how it works. That's the way it is. Second, can't speak back in public comment. Eli, you know better. Second, I want to piggyback on what Gary Fordyce said about the city clerk's office. We had situations where not only were we attacked the entire campaign, but things like posting our opposition slates, campaign flyers with all their pictures on our Facebook page for our neighborhood council, and things like that going completely unaddressed by the city clerk's office. We didn't have just people saying he said, she said. We were turning in documentations to every one of these things that were being violated, and they were completely ignored, and we never received any comments back as to what the results were. Third, the reason I'm bringing this issue to your attention is because it is in regards to something that's further on the agenda, but I wanted to give you a personal aspect of it right now. And that is, we have a problem in our community where we as neighbor council leaders are being attacked unjustly, lied about. We have had a board member. I had a board member who outed the fact that I have a permanent disability. I have been ridiculed now because of it, completely in the community, including having my president call me and tell me that they were going to put on the agenda to remove me from my neighborhood council because I'm disabled and obviously unable to do the job, which was what was stated in the letter. I have been called a liar, a thief, and they have no proof of anything, but this is what they do. Everything has been submitted in writing, every document to the city attorney's office, and I'm not blaming Elise with her, and I had this conversation earlier, but the state of California clearly states that anybody who is employed, a volunteer of, or an unpaid advocate is to be protected by that entity and that employer, and that is not happening here. For over a year, we have been reporting these issues. And when we get up to the next issue, I'm going to give you something. Actually, I'm going to hand it to you right now.
Would you bring up the flyers?
I'm going to have somebody hand you each a flyer. This was the latest. This has been escalating to the point of sexual harassment, and that's what you're going to be looking at now. This is a drawing that was done and posted on multiple Facebook pages and all over the communities, and the city attorney has not removed this fellow board member for putting this stuff up there. This is completely unacceptable, and something needs to be done immediately because the city attorney's office is not doing their job to protect neighbor council leaders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any more H's? Nope. Okay. There are no other general public comments for this particular item, which is item number 8. Thank you to everybody for your general comments, some stuff of which we'll have to follow through with. Number 9 on the agenda are updates and discussion on the Neighborhood Council funding by the Office of the City Clerk.
There should be one for each commissioner, and then one for the city attorneys, one for John, and I left several copies in the back for the public.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Melvin Cañas, Neighborhood Council Funding Program Program Manager. Here with my boss. I'm back to present you this month's report. I came last month, but since there was no quorum, we had skipped it. So the last time you heard of me was, I think, back in April. So I'll go through this document, which I said there are a few copies in the back, and we can make more available if anyone would like. But just as some general numbers right now, as where we are, as you know well know, we are in the last 2 weeks of the fiscal year, and as of this morning, neighborhood councils have spent around 78% of the funds that they started with back on July 1st, and you can see the breakdown there of where those monies have been spent. In outreach, office expenses, neighborhood purpose grants, elections expenditures, and community improvement projects. And a new feature this fiscal year, as you know, back from almost a decade ago, is the ability of neighborhood council funds to roll over. And so these are just estimates right now, like I said, as of today, as of this morning. And for the numbers that we looked at, about 17% of neighborhood council funds would be rolling over into next fiscal year, or around $719,000 put together. In all together, basically what we're looking at that will be swept is approximately 5%, give or take. Again, these are just approximate numbers, figures at this point. And we can, I'm sure you may have some questions about that. In terms of check payment requests, as you see there, over almost $4,000 under 4,000 individual check payment requests that our funding staff has reviewed throughout this fiscal year. Of those, 75% in all have been approved by the funding program. 25% have been denied. And keep in mind that a lot of those, actually, I don't have specific numbers, we ask, we advise neighborhood councils as to how those can be resubmitted. So a lot of those are resubmitted and then end up getting approved, but when they're initially submitted, they may be denied for one thing or another. Our processing time is under what we have stated to neighborhood councils, which is under 3 days, so we are at just a little bit over 2 days of processing. With credit card transactions, there have been around 6,200 individual credit card transactions. Of those credit card transactions, about 111 are pending receipts from the credit card holders. Neighborhood councils are taking about just under 10 days to upload those receipts to our funding portal. And of all those transactions, about a little bit over 300 have been flagged for some reason or another. Sometimes the receipts don't match, the amounts don't match, or we have just questions about the validity of the expenditure, and which most of those are addressed, and we are addressing those. In terms of monthly expenditure reports, the monthly accounting reports from each neighborhood council, we are 95% on target in terms of neighborhood councils submitting those reports. Of those that have been submitted, our staff has reviewed 99% of those reports that have been submitted. We currently have 8 neighborhood councils who are behind on their monthly expenditure report submissions, and we are working with them on getting those neighborhood councils up to date. And you see those neighborhood councils there, and some of those may be in your areas. In terms of neighborhood councils whose funds are currently frozen, we have 7 of those. And that's a combination of about 4 neighborhood councils that are in exhaustive effort status under Dunn, and that's Can Do Neighborhood Council, MacArthur Park, Neighborhood Council Watts, and Westlake South. Those 4 are in exhaustive efforts. The other 3, Elysian Valley Riverside, Hollywood Studio District, and LA 32, they are frozen because of they are delinquent on MERs. And we have been attempting to work with them, but we haven't gotten the response that we would like. In terms of trainings, as you can imagine, we have been busy right now with trainings more than usual because of the elections that have been going on and the transitions of boards. And so besides our regular twice a month trainings that we do here at City Hall, we have been going out to the individual planning areas, into the individual areas of the city to conduct trainings. And the next one this month is in West LA, and we are working on in South LA, which is the last regions that are going up for elections right now.
When is it? I didn't hear you.
For South LA, we are I believe it's going to be July 11th, I believe, and we're going to announce it soon, but we have identified a location, but it'll be in early July. And we are also doing one-on-ones. We meet with new cardholders or treasurers if they want to come in here to meet with us, and we go over with them how the portal works, uploading receipts, and so we just did that with one cardholder this morning. And on the back, you see I didn't give you your individual regional screenshot this time. I'm only giving you the citywide screenshot of how neighborhood councils are at this point, 2 weeks before the end of the fiscal year. Okay, so with that, let me know if you have any questions.
Melvin, I like this is Ray Regalado, Commissioner Regalado. I really appreciate that you kind of endured a difficult neighborhood council meeting in the area going back a couple of a week or so ago. And I'm telling you that I certainly appreciate your efforts and apologize for the difficulties. If there is something that I can do to help the discussion, I've been trying to lay the foundation, but for these difficulties to be ironed out. However, I think your time is important, all of your staff's time is important, and I just wanted to thank you for struggling through that. So, but let me know what I can do to assist
okay.
in that area.
Yeah, okay? Definitely.
All right.
Thank you.
I have a question, Commissioner Atkinson. On the training for the different areas, the different neighborhood councils, I'm always asking this question because I'm the only one that ever wants anything to be mandatory. Is it mandatory? Is the training mandatory?
Yes. For
I always get, I get depressed because there's always somebody on the South LA list that hasn't done their training or they are delinquent or their funds are frozen, and it's very sad. And so I'm wondering, and I saw that it was that you were doing training, and we just talked about it. So on these folks that are delinquent, is there like extra work done with them to try to figure out what the issue is? Because sometimes these folks are on these lists for a long time.
So we definitely, we communicate with the entire board via a letter, a written letter that goes out, and we do ask for the boards to the president or the treasurer to let us know what are what issues are going on with the board that we may not be aware of so that we can work with them. And, you know, we don't simply implement whatever consequence, you know, the policies and guidelines may say that are supposed to follow. We always engage neighborhood council in finding out what's going on and see how we can assist. And right now, definitely one of the common things right now is the issue with the transitions of boards, with the question of, for example, when the financial officers cease their function of as a financial officer because of the installation of a new board, and whether the new board member has gotten the necessary training, which is the in-person training, you know, or and so that has been more of a factor right now, I want to say, in the last month and a half, 2 months during elections. In other cases, we do work with DUNN. When it comes with, I think you may be referring to some of the neighborhood councils that have been in exhaustive efforts, we do work with DUNN, and we work through DUNN to have those monthly expenditure reports printed through the portal and presented to the public and acted upon, whether it be through the board or through DUNN. So we do definitely work with and try to find different ways that can be addressed. So I want to say yes, you know, that's what we want to make, we make ourselves available, and we're not quick to, you know, implement any rules like or consequences for not submitting them, you know, the day after or something. Yeah.
I guess my point is, Commissioner Atkinson again, I guess my point is actually, I guess when you look at the ratio of 99 neighborhood councils, that's really not that many that are, that right. Their funds are frozen. So, I mean, that's good. And there's not that many that are actually behind in their monthly expenditure reports. But because money is so important to the running of their neighborhood council, mm-hmm. even eight or even nine, where their money is frozen or where they're not doing their monthly expenses, it's it can become quite serious when their money is not available to do programs. And I just was trying to figure out there needs to be something with some kind of work between the city clerk and DUNN to alleviate that problem somehow. I don't know if the NEAs need to talk more to their neighborhood councils or how it could be done, but it's a concern, even though it is much better than it has been in the past. It really is. And so I don't want to shortchange that. I mean, I think it's, good work has been done on trying to make these neighborhood councils less delinquent, but those that are delinquent are going to have problems and not being able to do anything in their community because their money is frozen or they aren't doing their reports. And then it becomes a vicious cycle, and then, you know, then we say they're not doing anything. Well, because they don't have their money. So anyway, I'm concerned about that, and so I would love to see 100%, you know, monthly reports being submitted, and 100% of neighborhood councils not being, you know, their funds not being frozen. I mean, I think that's a adequate goal.
Definitely.
To be sure that everybody is functioning. Commissioner Littman.
I just want to make two quick points. One is that we've never seen this type of transparency before in neighborhood council, so I want to thank you for that. And secondly, I also just want to say this is the first time in a decade that we've seen neighborhood councils allowed to use their rollover. Typically, it's gone back to the general fund when we're in a budget crisis or back to the department. So I love, and you know, this had to take council action, but I love the fact that we are now in a position where neighborhood councils are able to use those funds on an ongoing basis. It's a huge sea change that neighborhood councils have been fighting for years. I know you guys are just implementing it, but we have advanced. I know there's still challenges, and we have to figure those out, but we've definitely advanced in a big way.
Yes, I didn't, and I didn't want to be critical of the clerk's office at all. I think it's great that the neighborhood councils are doing so much better, and I think it's because they do have something to follow, you know. But I just wanted to comment that, you know, 100% is really what it should be. Right. Any other comments? Commissioner Regalado?
I want to get your impressions on the rollover amount. That's $719,000. I don't know. When I look at that, it seems like a lot of money. But I'm wondering, in the eyes of the city clerk, help me feel comfortable, or help me feel maybe uncomfortable that we're not doing the best work we can as neighborhood councils, for instance, in spending the money, you know, in good reasons. Unless this just isn't, you know, enough to be concerned about. This is our first time doing it, and I too echo Commissioner Lindman's feeling that this is a great opportunity for neighborhood councils to be able to do this and be maybe more thoughtful about how their money is being spent. I don't know if there's been any kind of study or any kind of thought as to what is the ideal amount to roll over. How does this compare with the money the previous state has gone back to the general fund, you know, and any thoughts on that, or perhaps maybe the next time you can kind of let us know, because if more money is being rolled over, you know, the higher level than has been going to the general fund, maybe there's a level of thought going into why what they want to use the money for, which is great, you know, as opposed to maybe coming to the end of the year, we better just go out there and spend it. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's the proper way of spending the money. So any thoughts about the amount?
So this is Patty Santos, Chief MA at the City Clerk's Office. There, you're right in everything that you said, because we're kind of cautiously optimistic trying to figure out and analyze for next year where that $700,000+ goes. That's going to be the way that we'll know if that's a number to be worried about, or if that's a number to think is okay. It's lower, I think, than we thought it could be, because we weren't sure how much we didn't know what was going to happen. We kind of feel like there's people that did exactly what you said last year, just kind of found ways to give the money to the council office, give the money to a project the council office was working on, or do an MPG at the last minute, or something very last minute that didn't seem well thought out. And it's not as transparent to the public if you haven't planned that out in the beginning of the year, to just throw something out there in June to get your money out the door. So we really do feel like that's it feels like the neighborhood councils are just that much more thoughtful, that they don't have the need to feel like they have to just get the money out the door. So that's one good thing. It'll be very interesting to see what the carryover is next year, because this now makes several of the budgets in the $50,000+ range. Was that money held and it's going to be used, or are we always just going to be rolling over $10,000, which really means the $42,000 would have been enough? You know, it's kind of a numbers game that time's going to tell. We haven't been giving money back to the general fund. I think everyone kind of understands that. It reduces the amount of money you get next year, so it always stays in the trust fund, the neighborhood council trust fund. Whatever's not spent just reduces the amount the general fund has to allocate to the following fiscal year. So the first year I was in here, we was almost $1 million that just didn't get spent. Last year, though, because we think it was this push to make sure, and everyone knows what they're doing now, the push to make sure the money just gets out, because neighborhood councils take such pride in just getting their budget out the door. There was a lot of last-minute spending last year. I think like 40% of the spending was in the last quarter. That's a lot of spending. So this year it seems a little bit more methodical and thought out. Then another thing is the transition has kind of halted spending, because maybe some of the last-minute plans or last quarter plans that people were trying to do, we're having a hard time figuring out that board's no longer responsible for the money, and there's been some transition issues, I think, that have stalled spending. So it's kind of cool that they're able to have that rollover, so they don't have to lose money So it's everything that you said, and that's kind of where our thinking is on it. We're looking forward to kind of analyzing how much gets spent next year and do some thought on it in the future and see how productive that is.
To give you some comparisons, right now, if these numbers would stand right now, so neighborhood councils have until the end of Thursday, until June 20th, to continue spending money through their credit card. If this was to close today, we're looking at about 5% of total NC funds that would be going, that would be swept, right? That NCs would not be able to
have access to
5% this fiscal year. Last fiscal year was 11% that NCs that was swept. So we are doing 50% better, or no? Well, you got the numbers right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was 11%.
You get the numbers.
Yeah. Right. Those numbers, those figures are right. I compared it today, so that's where we're. So right. In that sense, it's good. I mean, in that less money is going back to the city, but as Perry just explained, it's not really going back to the city. I have interacted with some neighborhood councils who are purposely setting aside the $10,000 rollover because perhaps they have plans of what they want to do with that money for next fiscal year. The percentages that are right there on top of the report that you have with you, it tells you where this year's funds as of now is going: 34% to outreach, 31% to office expenses, 26% to MPGs. We may see those numbers, perhaps change at this time next year, because maybe neighborhood councils will have a little bit more money to give out perhaps to MPGs or do more outreach, what have you. But again, it is up to each neighborhood council to determine that. Mm-hmm. And you as commissioners can also communicate with them and say what those summonses will have a little bit of extra money left, others not much. Some have been really good about, we have one neighborhood council as of today with $200 left on their account.
One more question, Commissioner Atkinson. I don't know if my mind had wandered, so I don't know if you answered this. You may have, but we have on the agenda for you to clarify on the giveaway spending policy, and because that's always an issue. And I think we had a discussion before on how much something is worth and how much would you consider too much money to spend on a giveaway, or what's considered a gift of public funds or not. And we have it on here to clarify, and I don't think we talked about that today yet, so I didn't know whether you wanted to, we ask you to clarify it every week, but anyway, I mean every month, but clarify it again.
Right.
I'll just start by saying that we have learned a lot about the language that goes out and how it's being interpreted and how we can all understand this better, and we definitely learned a lot from our San Pedro issue of the infamous backpacks that really weighed heavy on us.
The famous backpacks.
And we're working on the language and to make it even more clear. Some of the things that have come up, I recently went with the council member to a meeting of the presidents, the NC presidents in Venice, in that area. And no, not Venice, CD2. All the neighborhood council presidents in CD2 got together with the councilman, and we were talking about this exact issue. And one of the things that comes up, and we're almost at a 50-50 of what the neighborhood councils, how they want to handle this or don't handle this, is the nominal value, which is something that some people want clarified when we put in our guidelines, what's of nominal value for a outreach item. And so all I can say is stay tuned on that. Because, for instance, people are like, just make it $3 or $5 or whatever it is. Put a dollar value and stick to that.
Right. I have just a quick question.
Okay.
I want to be sure I understand it because I do.
Mm-hmm.
The value of, or for instance, giving away the backpacks, mm-hmm. that was maybe too expensive. But that neighborhood council could work through a nonprofit if they wanted to.
Definitely.
And that nonprofit could take the lead.
Definitely.
And then the neighborhood council could work with the nonprofit or even donate to the nonprofit to get backpacks.
They can give an MPG to the nonprofit, and the nonprofit can have, as part of their program, a giveaway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, a part of their program to to do things like that yet.
Okay. So there's you can see there's various issues involved.
It's an interesting law because they're still giving their funds away. So
So the nominal value right now, we're leaving the language in there, is nominal because we do just kind of have to come to a general understanding of, you can talk about it with food and you can talk about it with outreach items. With food, for instance, if you have a neighborhood council meeting where you have 50 people that attend and you get Subway sandwiches for everybody, that's fine. If you have a committee meeting where two people attend and you go to Sizzler, that's not fine. So it's that nuance with that description, you'll still have people saying, well, city clerk said we can't buy food, but it really is that nuance.
Councils can't have food.
You can
at their meetings.
If you have food at your meetings, and I'm talking Subway sandwiches or something very simple, hot dogs.
Yeah, because
Subway
they
sandwich.
Have a health certificate too, right?
I mean, right, exactly. Yeah, and because your meetings are at night, and you know, there's a million things we can talk about breaking down food. But the point is, we've also had committee meetings where there's five people on a committee, only three attend, and they treat themselves to a dinner. I shouldn't say treat themselves. They didn't see that wasn't anything wrong with that. So that's why this gift of public funds and giveaways and food has been such an issue, because for the 99 neighborhood councils, we've seen everything. We've seen board members that want to buy outreach T-shirts for $25, which to me seems too much for a T-shirt, but it's, you know, we can let that go. Another board wants to buy $85 jackets for outgoing board members. You can do one, you can't do the other, if you can kind of see the nuance there. That's why we're leaving it not vague, we hope, but we're not imposing you can only spend $5 on a giveaway item or you can only buy T-shirts for $25. We're leaving it open and allowing ourselves to all as a team, neighborhood councils and our funding team, to use our best judgment of what makes the most sense.
Any other questions?
I just want to make a comment here.
Ms. Wiebe.
Yeah. Commissioner Wiebe, just again, want to reiterate some of the things that have been said here, and thank you so much for this format. And speak positively about the information on some of the neighborhood councils that are delinquent, because there are a number of the neighborhood councils which I have some representation that are delinquent. But what it gives me is the opportunity to then go back to their or to have a conversation with their representative in Dunn and get a better picture, as I'm sure you have a better picture, but then I can find out specifically what is going on with that neighbor council and possibly have some better conversation with them. You know, it may be, as with one, that their board is just too large, or that in election they didn't have enough people interested in the community to have enough people elected so that they constantly are out of quorum. So, I mean, there are things that happen that really are not, yes, they impact the finance, but it's something that we have to look at as commissioners and as a department to see how we can help overall with our neighborhood councils. So I find this an extremely helpful document. And also looking at how money has been spent overall, I think our opportunity to spend on community projects is just as important as the, the MPGs. So perhaps, you know, it's something that we can have a conversation about. Not you, but, you know, we can have conversations about and how we can bring that to the attention of our neighborhood councils. So, again, thank you so much for this work. It's really appreciated.
Anything else on this one?
Yeah. What about the public purpose aspect of the law? Are you, public purpose? Mm-hmm. I mean, will that be considered? On the one hand, I understand, you know, three people show up at a board meeting and they feed themselves. But at the same time, food was used as a tool for recruitment to get more people to show up at the meeting. And obviously, if some other person had showed up who had gotten notice of the meeting, I'm pretty sure that they would have offered that food to them as well. So I wonder, you know, I understand that some cases this is subjective and you need to use a reasonability test on this, but there is sort of this public purpose aspect of the law to consider.
We definitely consider that. You know, in terms of meetings, you know, we understand that we've asked the board, you know, was this a public meeting or was this a meeting just of the three of you unannounced? You know, was there an agenda to Brown Act and in a public accessible facility? So definitely, ultimately, it was the use of the funds for a public purpose. You know, we do consider those factors before we make any determination that, you know.
That may cross the reasonable line. We start with public purpose and then we go on to reasonableness.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay, don't go anywhere because you have number 10, which is an update and discussion on the 2019 Neighborhood Council elections.
Oh, that's not
yours. Sorry.
That's not you.
I know.
Thank you.
I didn't see you, so I thought they had to do that report too. Ube, I do have a question.
Yes, of course. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Christopher Garcia, City Clerk Elections, and I have with me Sofia Anguiano. We both manage the Neighborhood Council election process. We're coming to a close. This past Saturday was our last regional election, although we do have one more Neighborhood Council election this Thursday for downtown LA. This process started in December, late December, with candidate filing for Region 5 or the Hollywood area Neighborhood Councils. For the candidate filing, we had over 1,800 candidates, 1,900 roughly filed, so a little less than, so we were able to certify most of them. Overall, the election started in March 31st on a Sunday and then continued on a fairly regular basis. When compared to 2016, which had online voting, a pilot program for 35 neighborhood councils, a single instance of vote by mail for the Westwood Neighborhood Council, the turnout so far, granted we have one more neighborhood council to go, turnout for those elections was 21,647, and right now we're at 21,590. So we're looking to exceed the 2016 turnout totals, which is great. Of the 80 neighborhood councils that we've had elections for so far, 40 have had higher turnouts than in 2016. You know, there's some drastic, you know, differences for some neighborhood councils where, you know, their turnout was dramatically low, and other neighborhood councils, their turnout was dramatically high. So it varies from council to council, and there's a lot of reasons why that might be. Other than that, we are going to be preparing for our records retention period, whereby neighborhood councils can start picking up their stakeholder registration forms, their candidate filing information, and their ballots. Those registration forms are particularly important because we're turning those over to the councils in the raw form, the original documents. Those will contain stakeholder information that the neighborhood councils can then use for outreach purposes. So these are the folks that came out to participate, so they can now be involved in ongoing neighborhood council processes. We are going to be beginning our debriefing process as well to assess what went well, what didn't go well, what definitely needs to change for the next round of elections. And like funding, this is definitely going to be a work in progress. This is the first time the neighborhood councils, or the city clerk, I'm sorry, oversaw the entirety of the neighborhood council election since 2010. Prior to that, we'd been involved in candidate filing and ballot production, but this is the first time we really got involved with election day operations. So we have a lot to fix going forward on a lot of fronts, you know, as far as how processes are going to change and also how we're going to respond to any reforms that will be made in the near future regarding.
I have a question.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
Quick question. At the end of the election period, are you going to give us a nice report like the city clerk over here did on spending?
Yes.
Because we don't have anything in writing, so whatever it was you said, I didn't quite understand everything because you didn't hand out anything.
Yes.
So it would be nice if you're going to come on a regular basis, it would be nice to have updates, I think, in writing. But that's just my opinion, and that's my request. I have another question, one more question.
Yes.
Isn't it true?
It's good, and it's true.
I have one more question, and it's, I'm trying to think, a general question so the city attorney won't get mad at me. Okay, here's a general question. When certifying an election, do you certify, are you certifying people too?
Yes.
Okay. In certifying the election, what is your responsibility in being sure that when people fill out their affidavits, they're not lying? Or do you have a responsibility, or do you feel that that is, you know, just self-qualification, and
right,
you take their word for what they're telling you?
Right. So that can, so for example, for candidate filing, so all
speak up
for the candidate filing process, all neighborhood council candidates, regardless of what neighborhood council they're from, have to provide qualifying documentation. The qualifications vary from council to council. Our office has to follow what the guidelines are stated by the, or at least laid out by the neighborhood council. However, we take the qualifying information at face value. So if someone says, I live at a particular location within a neighborhood council, a particular region, and they provide, say, a driver's license or utility bill, we take that information at face value. We don't investigate further beyond that, you know, as far as to qualify that person. We have, you know, 1,900 candidates all filing at the same time, and to continue through that process can be quite time-consuming. For voters, for example, for self-affirmation neighborhood councils, these are neighborhood council elections where the voter merely has to state on their registration form that they're a stakeholder. There's no follow-up verification, either on the spot or after the election, because it's like kind of a, they're self, you know, they're affirming that they're a stakeholder. For documentation required neighborhood councils, it's similar to the candidate filing. We simply go off of what the voter provides on election day, and we don't retain those documents. We just visually verify and we compare it to what was provided on the form.
So if somebody doesn't tell you the truth, and you certify,
right,
and then you go on, and then they become a member of the board, then it's going to be, it gets thrown back to Dunn or to the board of that particular neighborhood council to look into that issue, even if you haven't done your due diligence?
There is a challenge.
To me, due diligence
right,
is to check, and I won't go into specifics, but I checked on a person. Their organization does not exist, and all I did was Google. They were not listed on the Secretary of State or the Department of Corporations. They are not in existence. They have an ad on their letterhead. They have no address. They have no email. They have the name of what they are. To me, that is not due diligence, and it's not right. And so, I don't know how it gets thrown back. Obviously, the clerk doesn't want to take back the responsibility. It seems somehow it gets moved on. And so maybe the city attorney at some point in time can explain to me how something like that can happen, because to me, that means a truth was not told. There is no address. There is no email. And it's an organization that is not even really formally started yet. And yet, the clerk verified that this person belonged to this organization and is a wonderful person and should be able to run.
Can I ask a question? Commissioner Vollmers, I appreciate Commissioner Atkins' passion here. And I think what we need to look at is the broader picture is, was there a gap in procedure or policy in certifying this candidate? So was there a procedure within the city clerk that is disconnected, or was it something that just wasn't done because you didn't have time to do it, or is it something that we need to do as commissioners to say this is something we need to give more teeth to so that there is a certification process, that an actual certification process where there is a check? Because just like if we were voting in the city election, you went through a process to register as a voter. So in this case, what can we do as a commission to give more teeth so that there is a checks and balance, because we don't want to just say specifically who this person is or what neighborhood council this belonged to, but procedurally, what can we do across the board to give you a operational manual?
I don't believe there's any procedural gap. When we're certifying candidates, you know, our staff is instructed to make sure that the candidates are meeting all the criteria that is provided by the neighborhood council. But as I mentioned before, there aren't additional steps added on to that. If the commission could provide additional teeth, that is something that I think our office would definitely welcome, as far as heightening the threshold so that we can make sure that candidates are certainly qualified to run for the seat that they are. They do file under the penalty of perjury when they're filing with us, and that is something that we can look into for the specific candidates. But again, we don't do this follow-up investigation for each and every candidate that is done.
I guess so. The question is, Commissioner Villa-Ramirez again. I think Commissioner Atkins is asking, if there wasn't a check, how did you certify the candidate?
Hello, I'm Sofia Anguiano here with the Office of the City Clerk. So when we certify candidates, again, we're asking for documentation. So if the candidate provides us a letter of an organization that they present, that they represent, if the physical address is not in the letterhead, it is included in the body. And for the case I'm assuming that you're referring to, the letter had the address in the body.
I'm sorry to interrupt, because this is not a tribunal for one particular thing, and I'm really going to advise to please stay away from that. I think it's appropriate to ask questions in general. I would like to interject, however, because we do give advice on occasion to City Clerk as well. There are several different scenarios. I think it's not as simple to say that one individual looked on the internet and just didn't see something. There are different ways that these checks can go about. I believe there are times where there is a challenge there before a certification. If something is challenged, the City Clerk does look into it further. They ask for additional documentation. They may be provided documentation that is not coming up on the internet. Mm-hmm. So I would just like to just point out, in general, sometimes what is not obvious just from doing a Google search may have been included in something that the clerk, and I'm talking in general.
So I can, okay.
I'm not talking specific. Yeah. But there may be things, and I'm just only saying this because...
So then what happens, in general, then what's the procedure? Because you were saying that some things may show up that you don't know, might not be able to see it on the internet. So then what happens? Do you just let it drop, or what happens?
No, I mean, when there's a challenge, there's other issues. The way, the clerk can speak more to this, but I just want to just... inform the board that there are different procedures. If there is a challenge, there are procedures other that we haven't heard today that they look into as well. And certification, pardon me, will only
come. Well, and there's a couple of ways to challenge, because the person can certify that they want to run for office, and you can challenge that at that time if it's 10 days or if it's before they actually get certified or put on the ballot. So I understand that. But then sometimes folks may not know that person. And so then the issue comes up whether you finally certify the election, and they have a certain amount of time before the certification of the election to also challenge.
Right. Well, so in this case,
I
just wanted to point out.
I understand all that. So that's the procedure then, is to get your challenge in on time. I just want to know how due diligence is really affected.
So, Commissioner Villa-Ramirez here.
And we can't talk in general, so therefore should I guess be referred to the city attorney to look into.
Mr. Garcia, could you share?
Oh, that's not
during,
your job.
During
not,
this.
Whose job is it? I guess is once the procedure, we understand that there's a procedure, and that it should be followed, and there's many reasons why we don't have all the information. I understand that. Then there's like nothing could be done?
Can I? It depends on the scenario. If there's a challenge before certification, mm-hmm. there are different things mm-hmm. that can be done. Mm-hmm. If there isn't a challenge and then there's certification, but it's later found out, then I believe Dunn does look into it, and then there are removal or procedures.
Who
that
looks
are
into it if that happens?
I'm sorry. So now it's done.
Who looks into it if that happens? If this
done.
Done.
Yes, and then the board also may decide at that point, if they find out information later, mm-hmm. to have a removal proceeding, but that's going to be up to the board. Mm-hmm. So there are different scenarios that happen in this. It's okay. kind of a continuum. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Now, if the board it wants to deal with that, that is a different issue. I'm just trying to caution based on just.
So the question is, if it gets to a board and a board just says we just don't want to deal with it, then it doesn't have to get dealt with.
Okay,
that's fine.
There are different
if that's the answer, areas. That's fine. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, Commissioner Villa-Ramirez. Mr. Garcia, how did you have any challenges during the candidate filing process?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes.
So people did follow the rules and did file challenges during this process.
Yes,
so there was. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do we?
Any other questions?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess Commissioner Lippman, as a follow-up to that, were there any of the challenges upheld, or and was there a cure for that, or?
Challenges were, let's see. So I know of one challenge, just off the top of my head, that was upheld. Simple one, it was a person who just ran against their term limits. They weren't allowed to because they were running up against the term limits. Those are a little bit simpler. Oftentimes, the challenges weren't upheld because, person was saying, I don't believe this person's a stakeholder, but based on our follow-up, we determined that they did meet the qualifications as a stakeholder. And that was the most common type of challenge. But, without going into further detail, those are probably the most typical ones.
Okay. Thank you.
Another question?
Yeah, just mm-hmm. wanted to say that I went to more than half a dozen elections, particularly in my region, but outside my region as well. I do this to talk to the neighborhood council leaders, which I think is important, but also to kind of test the system a little bit in a positive and supportive way. because I think it's important for us as commissioners to do a little bit of oversight. And I voted in some, I did not in others, because I sort of gave myself the own reasonableness test of, do I qualify as a stakeholder in these elections? And in some I said, absolutely. And in others I said, I besides being a commissioner that oversees this region, I don't really have a stake, and therefore I should not vote in the election. I just want to say that, I appreciate not rearranging the regions. That led to less confusion. I'm really great to see the numbers. When you provide the report, please provide us with a median, not just a mean, because the median will give us a better sense for how the system did. I really appreciate how professional it was. We say, we joke a lot that, Ron Galperin always says, I'm doubling your salary, but your salary is zero, so you're still earning nothing as volunteers. But the fact that you treated this in the same way as a real election was really appreciated, mm-hmm. right? You showed up and it felt like you were at an election site. The way the booths were set up, they're the same booths that you use for a regular city election. That makes a difference because it provides a sense of professionalism for the neighborhood council system. And for the most part, you dealt quite well with the fact that in some cases, there were longer lines in Venice than there were for the 2016 or the 2008 elections, presidential elections. The line in Venice was over 45 minutes long all day for 8 hours. So, and they had, what was it, over 2,000 or nearly 2,000 people voted.
Nearly.
So
congratulations for that. I'm glad you also admit that there's a lot to fix. And whatever reforms that you suggest, we'd love to see them and be part of the process in helping to move those forward. I do think that considering heightening the threshold is important. One of the things that I did not personally see but was communicated was that particularly for self-affirmation, there was this, because you had to fill out the form, and then they said, oh, where in the neighborhood are you? And when there was some sort of generalization of, oh, you know, in this general area, there was an effort by city clerk staff to sort of clarify that. And we don't want to be in the business of pushing folks. If they can't identify how they're involved with the neighborhood, then they really shouldn't be considered a stakeholder in the neighborhood. And so that might be a way, being more of a, you know, a sort of a independent arbiter and letting the person identify where that is, I think would be critical. Another thing that I saw sort of in terms of inconsistent training, at some election sites, I won't say which ones, well, I guess I could, but at some election sites, once you exited the voting booth, there was a table that the neighborhood council maintained where you could share your information with the neighborhood council. It was a city body just doing outreach, no political, and they were within, at least in Venice, within inside the building itself, and I think in Mar Vista as well, and Palms was part and parcel with sort of the initial process, and it's site dependent. But then in other places like West Adams and in Bel Air, they were sort of told, you know, you can't set up a table, you can't collect email information, that type of stuff. And there was cause for concern. Those are a little bit more site specific. You know, I think in one case it was the library or the school site that said you couldn't do it. But there was some inconsistency because I did talk with staff. You know, and pointed out, like, I was just at another neighborhood council, and the table for the neighborhood council was literally in the building, and now it's not about that. And there were spacing issues, so I get it, but just making sure that there's some conversation around that, because I think it is helpful. You know, you have 1,800 people coming through the doors for a neighborhood council to be able to communicate with those folks, and obviously they can because you're going to provide the records, but, you know, people are going to self-identify and say, yeah, of course I want to, you know, get more information. That's what I've heard so far. I think we also, maybe this is just a question, and then I'll hand it over. In the past, I know we've had an independent, like, group of neighborhood council leaders who have looked at challenges. Was that different this time, or?
It was a little bit different. We didn't have any grievance panels going forward, even though that was an option, but we haven't utilized it. We are really looking to change the challenge process. And I know that this was a motion that had come up to council before, but we'd like to revisit that process because we feel that process definitely needs to be straightened out. And I think our concerns are, you know, where we're good at administering the elections, but being like the judge, jury, and executioner of sorts, it puts us in a precarious spot. So we want to make sure that that process is a little bit more defined and easier to deal with post-election challenges.
Right. That, yeah, and I think we've seen this in the past where this is Commissioner Libin, the governmental body, in that case, the department, was sort of the blame was placed on them for screwing it up, and when there was an independent group of neighborhood stakeholders who at least the process was followed and was done right, you know, people were still unhappy, but there was a sense of, well, somebody outside of the folks who administered the election took a look at it, and this was their independent decision. So.
Okay.
Thank you,
Commissioner.
Thank you very much. No. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Commissioner Wiebe. Would you remind me, please, I know asked this last meeting, but where the neighborhood councils are able to pick up the forms that yes. the stakeholders.
Yeah. So our forms are going to be available from our headquarters over at Piper Technical Center, and actually our staff here sitting in the back row will, they're the ones that work directly with the neighborhood councils. They'll be responsible for reaching out to them to notify when they can start picking up their documents. So so they and what they need in order to pick up those documents. So they need to designate a representative to come and retrieve the documents. That's the way we can transfer custody of that information to the designated representative and to the neighborhood council. So we'll start making those calls really soon, because the first deadline is coming up at the end of this month.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much. I'm postponing, I guess, the general, Mike Fong is supposed to be here, but he's not here yet. So did he text you or anything?
Not yet.
So we'll go on to the next item and come back. And if he does come, he said he was going to be here.
Towards the end of the,
at 2.
If they're not able to come, I can give the report. I'm just rather wait for reason.
Okay, I won't worry about it. Item number 12. Item number 12 is discussion, and we always say this, discussion and possible action to approve the contract. Oh, this is, okay, I'm sorry, this is different, I'm sorry. Discussion and possible action to approve the contract between the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment and Community Development Technology Center, Los Angeles Public Allies, in the amount of $36,000 for services rendered from September 1st, 2018 through June the 30th, 2019. Who's here to speak on that? Tom?
Yep.
Hi, Tom Soon, Department of Neighborhood Empowerment, Director of Outreach and Communications. Let me just give you a quick framing. We just had a conversation regarding with the city clerk and their role with the city elections, and I do want to thank them for a lot of the, I do want to thank them for that portion of doing the elections outreach. What happened this year that was different from other years was that we broke up the administration and the implementation and the day of the day-to-day logistics to the city clerk, and the outreach fell onto our hands. So we were responsible, our department was responsible for outreach, and the city clerk was responsible for the day-to-day questions that you were asking. So generally speaking, and this is what leads us here to this discussion regarding this contract. And as part of the outreach efforts here, what was very important for us to do is that in addition to the traditional media, such as the mail, the social media, such as Facebook, Instagram, and so forth, we felt that as part of the mandate of the city charter, in order to get more people involved, one of our mandates is to make sure that we get those areas of low civic participation folks involved as well. And with that, this is what we thought would be a good idea to bring on this group called the Public Allies. And this is what this contract is about. In addition to being the Director of Outreach and Communications, I also oversee the South LA region area. And through that area, I had an opportunity to connect with some nonprofits that specializes in working with areas of low civic engagement, areas with a social justice lens, and with that, one of them is the CD Tech. And CD Tech had this program, it's called Public Allies, and within that, it's a 10-month program from October through June, and whereas a public ally will be placed in either a nonprofit or some sector, work with that organization to come up with some goals with a social justice lens. And that's what the contract you have with you here. And I do want to introduce you. We not only got one public ally, we decided to get two public allies. We have Mateo Gill right here. He's actually a second year public ally. So we felt, hey, look, it'd be good to have someone with a little more experience. And also DeAnthius Cal as well. So these are our two public allies. So I was hoping to, if you want to hear, if you, Commissioner, after this presentation, if you want to hear a little bit what they've done, I mentioned that the City Tech program was found in South LA, but we felt that to do the outreach for, just outreach in general, also for elections, they've actually gone through all parts of the city of Los Angeles as well, so they could speak on that experience. So with that, that's my presentation. Open to any questions. Yes.
Any questions?
Commissioner Regalado, was there a measure or a threshold to identify whether the outreach was successful or not? I mean, whether matrix identifying points, you know, to
identify? Yeah, that's what we're trying to, that's what we're working on right now. I don't have it here with me because it wasn't part of the plan. So when, as the city clerk is preparing the report, some of the measurables that we'll be looking at is the first time folks involved with the system. You know, we found out that from, and we have a breakdown, and out of the 1,804 candidates, at least 50% are brand new folks. And we had that broken down into the different regions as well, whereas you see in South LA, the number goes up to 60 or 70, you know. So that, so in terms of measurables, we're still kind of working on that. Some of the variables that we'll be looking at is what made a neighbor council successful. Venice, as Commissioner Lemon mentioned, has always traditionally been very high turnout, right? Whereas some other councils, right? They, for example, this past Saturday, the Palmer Congress West Neighbor Council, they decided to do their elections at the mall by a farmer's market. So we saw increase in that numbers there, maybe because of the critical mass of people in that area. In 2 weeks, the Mid-City Neighborhood Council did there at a music festival, and we saw increase there too. So those are the factors we'll look into, is that are there partnerships where is it makes sense to do elections where there's more of a critical mass of folks, or you know, what drives up the elections? So we'll have that for you, Commissioner.
Great. Thank you.
Commissioner Lippman, I would just to back or support that, it does say that there's like output target numbers as part of the contract, number of presentations, so it'd be good to know how many there were, number of databases developed, so it'd be good to know how many there were, number of plans, people, organizations, community spaces engaged.
Yeah, let me, if I could bring, actually, I'm going to have them.
Oh, okay.
Come up here and speak on that. So they could speak on a little work. That'd be good for you to know them, too. So,
yeah. And I saw both of them in the field, so I can confirm that they were out there. So. But I would say that I did meet some new I've met with a number of new candidates, and I was impressed by how they not only represented the communities that are listed here in the contract, but talked about actively recruiting and campaigning and working with other like how their slate was representative of some of these typically underrepresented communities. So, okay.
Yeah, so as part of the Public Allies, my name is Mateo Gil, and this is Deanthius Cowell. So as part of the Public Allies program, we go through a lot of trainings to develop outreach tools, and one of these trainings helped us learn about asset mapping. So we basically used this training or tool, and we applied it to the department, and we created databases, we created an outreach plan, and we basically created an outreach plan for the whole department that the whole department now uses in all of their outreach efforts.
So, hi, my name is Deanthius Cowell. I'm actually a first year in Public Allies, so it was my first year learning in the program. We also had trainings on power, privilege, and oppression, the school-to-prison pipeline, so we had this lens when going out into the community. And as Mateo mentioned, we did have a training on asset mapping, so we were already looking at basically nonprofit organizations that work with marginalized communities. So we went to places like Bien Star, the Braille Institute, Apex Academy, Covenant House, California, the Youth Policy Institute, PATH, which deals with the homelessness crisis, the Los Angeles Neighborhood Land Trust, which deals with environmental justice, Heart of Los Angeles, which works with the youth, Kerosene, which works with the undocumented, the list goes on. So we wanted to go with organizations that work with these communities so we can partner with them, build community partnerships, and get them to get their members and people they serve to join the councils, or at least go to board meetings, definitely vote, and hopefully join committees and build the capacity of these council boards.
In addition, as many of these organizations that we connected with, the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment didn't have a relationship prior, so we basically created a partnership, a relationship, and one that we can continue to foster and grow moving forward.
Tom, so Neighborhood Empowerment again. In terms of the outreach for targeted numbers, it says develop outreach plan, output number 4, make community presentations, 4, and develop maintain database. That's 4 as well. I think, yeah, you want to talk about that?
So we actually created 2 databases as far as outreach and having meetings. We are over 30. We're going to count everything up. We'll add that to the output. Also want to say, like, we went door-to-door canvassing in underserved areas of the neighborhood. So we were trying to increase awareness through that, too. This past Saturday, I was actually at EC West. That Friday, we went to EC West. We handed out many flyers to community residents all around the mall and polling location. And on Saturday, I did some outreach at the Jungles, which is an underserved neighborhood. So we wanted to involve everyone who's typically not involved in these councils or maybe have less knowledge of them.
I think one thing that I've definitely learned while being with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment is I believe this is a system that does work, but it requires that everybody is included at the table. And I believe that the partnership between Public Allies and the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment has been a fruitful one, in which we have increased engagement for folks who are marginalized and not as well represented in the neighborhood council system.
So, Commissioner Atkinson, so the program went through June.
Yeah.
So it's now done?
Actually, our last day is the 26th of June.
Oh, that's right, because we're still in June, yes. Yeah, okay. And is the purpose also to get an uptick in the population of the neighborhood councils, because so few people go to neighborhood council meetings? I mean, is one of the
matrices
outcomes, hopefully, for more involvement with the neighborhood council movement?
Yeah, definitely. I think part of it is that when they didn't focus just in the South LA area, even though it's based in South LA. Like, for example, we first started in Hollywood, Commissioner. You know, only in the commissioner we beat, that is, mm-hmm. Because that's when the first elections were, and from that they went to different areas. So I think the goal is to, as with any attempts for outreach, it's about engagement and awareness, right? To get let's get the folks out there and aware that, and like just with their efforts, we've gotten some folks that we traditionally probably would not have reached to join some of these boards. So like the goal is both, is to get candidates, and now how do we find ways to keep these folks informed and either coming to the meetings or engaged.
Yeah, it sounds great. It's just like I was trying to figure out how do they keep the program going, because it really is.
Well, you know, this is our first time in, I think, the department's history that we've ever done something like this. And if you look at the Public Allies program, they usually partner with nonprofit groups. I think that's why I think the contract took a little longer to do. Is this is the first time we've ever done it with a city department? Then I think so. This is something new to us too, and so we're very, very happy to be part of this process.
I have a question to the city attorney. Can a neighborhood council work with a nonprofit to do some of this outreach if they wanted to? Could they use some of their funds to work with a nonprofit to do
that? That would be something we'd have to talk about.
Check it out?
Yeah.
Okay.
With the individual neighborhood council?
Yeah.
It would depend.
I mean, they have to do outreach anyway.
It would be on a case-by-case basis, but, yeah, we'd have to look at all the facts.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Lipman?
Yes. Are you guys Avistas?
No.
No? Through AmeriCorps?
Oh. Yeah, AmeriCorps.
Okay, but you're not Vistas.
Vistas is another program that falls under AmeriCorps.
Okay. Were people with disabilities also included in this outreach effort?
Yeah, definitely. Our asset mapping, we use a tool called Google Maps. So first we'd identify local nonprofit organizations within the neighborhood council boundaries, and then we'd go there. So I noticed the Braille Institute, so we did establish some connections there.
Okay.
And we weren't trying to exclude anyone, actually.
No, and I believe there was an expo that we outreached that was up for handicapped folks, and we did connect with them and let them know about the neighborhood council, the elections. Great. To try to increase engagement from those folks from that community.
Great. I don't know if there's a plan to continue this. There's the disability advocate, rights advocates, DRA. That's pretty big. And then there's another group called K-Life, C-A-L-I-F, here in Los Angeles that does that. So, and they're very grassroots based, so they'd be good organizations. I think this is great. I think this is great and critical and really important. I'm glad you guys went and canvassed as well. That's really important to go and talk to actual people. So, this system is meant to empower people who have not been empowered. And I think, as we age and become more mature, I think it's incumbent upon us to really think about the ways that we can empower communities who have been disempowered. I work with another agency. We worked on the equity, an equity platform is what it's called, framework at LA Metro, another government agency. And that's supposed to determine the way that they make all of their decisions. And so it's similar to this asset map that you kind of created. And so I'm glad to hear that the department is piloting, I guess I would say, more of an equity platform, because I think it's sorely lacking in other parts of the city infrastructure. And so the more that we can use this as a organizing framework or toolkit for other departments, I encourage you to go out to other departments, planning, for instance. And even our incredible city council, who are obviously our representatives, but I think it would be important for them to see some of the work that you did as well, because this I think is the biggest challenge we have. And you might be wondering why is this white cis male talking about this stuff, but this is the work that I do. I sit on the Slate Z board, which is in South Los Angeles, doing transit empowerment. So this is the talk that we're discussing in terms of government agencies and outreach to targeted communities who have just not been a part of the process and who've lost out because they're not getting the resources that they really deserve to have. So.
Any other comments? I will entertain a motion.
John Darnell, Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. As one of the field representatives out there, I just want to say, they didn't just do outreach. They also helped with Beyond Neighborhood Councils, where Commissioner Wiebe spoke. And they went to neighborhood council meetings, learned about issues and projects that neighborhood councils deal with on an ongoing basis. So when they go out and they advocate for our system, they know in detail what they're talking about, at least enough to be able to really sell it. And I think that's why they've had so much success. So at least just hearing it from one of the field representatives of the department, I just wanted you to know that.
Thank you. Yeah. I will, according to...
Commissioner Regalado here. You said something that really piqued my interest, and you indicated something, some kind of connection to the school-to-prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. How did you address that? How did that come into the equation of outreach and?
So one thing that we did is that we never done before was that we try to do these spotlight on civic-like workshops. Well, that was our first one, and we're trying to do another one because the timing is a little challenged right now. But the first one we did a spotlight on civic life. It was spotlighting the immigrant community and the formerly incarcerated communities too. So we brought together leaders and had a panel discussion with leaders of the immigrant community and leaders of the formerly incarcerated, the Cell Block 9 person that we kind of worked with. And just had a, and we invited all neighborhood council leaders there and different nonprofits together to and to address and talk about those issues to make sure people are aware. Because one thing people don't understand is that the neighborhood council system, it's they don't check documentation status, and if you're formerly incarcerated, you can still run for the board too. And that was really our message in terms of getting a lot of our outreach out there, is that those those things don't matter. You can still get involved if you if you qualify as a stakeholder there. So that's some of the things that then and their public allies with their contacts, they helped us out with that.
As far as like formerly incarcerated nonprofits, we connected with Shields for Families, who do a lot of good work in that sector. We also went to schools. We talked to nonprofits that work with youth, because as you know, the most important thing to cancel that pipeline is to increase education, talk to the youth about education. So we did meet with youth groups that are dealing with that issue as well. And it depended on the council age. So if you're in a NC where you could be 16 and vote, we tried to talk to the youth more and encourage them to participate in this part of the process, because it is a way to better your future. I mean, you get a lot of experience with civic engagement, with government, and you get a lot of nonprofit experience. So I think it's a step forward we could use in combating this problem, this issue in the current age.
In addition to the social justice lens that we brought to the department, we also launched a presentation / workshop on power, privilege, and oppression to the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment, and basically helped others on our team develop the same social justice lens that we have. And through this training, we explored power dynamics, we explored privilege, and we explored the different systems of oppression, and we kind of broke that down and what that looks like in the community.
We should
do it here. I really am impressed with the subject matter that you're covering, because every single one of these affect our society today, and if we can engage youth in at the youngest age possible to understand the power of engagement, the power of involvement, I think we do make a big impact on that prison pipeline issue, because there are opportunities out there. So quick question in and around that, are you bringing youth to help engage or teaching them some of these skills so that they understand what privilege is all about and how that affects them, and what civic engagement and social justice and all these things? I'm actually bringing them in and maybe working with them in groups and things like that, because that's all excellent work. And I'll tell you, there's no better organization than AmeriCorps, because my daughter was a product of AmeriCorps. So it's a great organization.
Not specifically as involved with the councils, other than the outreach we did, encouraging them to participate, but we both had our own individual team service projects, mm-hmm. which were targeted at youth. Like, we had to build a module to teach the youth about environmental justice and what they can do to combat some of the issues going on with that. So we developed that module. We had a panel. We actually had a neighborhood council president and some local nonprofits, so they could talk about the community beautification aspects, the basically being advocates of 311, things such as that matter. So that was a way we could kind of bring in both elements of the youth and the neighborhood council system.
And the project that was a project the Anthony has worked on with his team. I worked on a separate team, and we launched a series of mental health workshops at Youth Justice Coalition, which is basically a nonprofit that works with incarcerated youth. And we basically informed the youth about the different coping tools that are available, the importance of self-care, and just mental health overall. So I think it's something that I think that we should definitely do more of, and I definitely agree that we do need to be talking to the youth as young as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Okay.
Can I make a motion?
I'm going to entertain a motion finally, because that was what the whole point was.
Commissioner Vo Ramirez would like to make the motion. to approve the contract between Department of Neighborhood Empowerment and Community Development Tech in the amount of $36,000 for the services rendered from September 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019.
Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Vollmer-Ramirez and seconded by you?
Commissioner Regalado.
Commissioner Regalado to approve the contract, the professional services contract. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you. Good work.
Thank you so much.
12. Okay, number 13. Item number 13 is what we usually put on the agenda, at least we have been lately. Discussion of possible action regarding regarding whether the commission should appoint an ad hoc committee to consider policy establishing a uniform process for the censure and removal of neighborhood council board members. Reason for establishing a policy would include openness, fairness, a proper degree of procedural due process, and provide consistent guidelines to neighborhood councils when enforcing provisions of their bylaws and other applicable policies regarding conduct of board members. This item has to do with our code of conduct,
excuse
right?
Excuse me.
And not following through.
Pardon me, Commissioner. Elise Rin, city attorney.
This was something that Lynn was working on, and he's not here today.
Does the commission wish to, was there item number 13 also that was?
Go out of order and do 14?
I believe.
I mean,
unless the commission.
15. No, wait a minute. What happened?
You were reading 14, so perhaps.
Yeah, just wondering
14
if you want to.
And then 13 after.
Just pointing out that I don't know if you've considered item 13.
Oh, we left that one off.
I think you just.
Leadership development.
You said item 13, but you read item 14.
Okay.
Where is that?
You read the language for item
13, okay.
But you said it was item 14, so I'm just making a clarification. So thank you.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Regarding training, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, number 13. I'm sorry, I apologize.
No.
Discussion on possible action regarding training for the neighborhood council board members. Discussion may include creating policies for mandated leadership and conflict resolution for board members and candidates. It may also request the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment for arrangement of standardized trainings as outlined by Administrative Code 22801H. And then we have the administrative code listed. The department already has, is already charged with and shall manage and arrange training for department staff and neighborhood council officers and staff, such as a training in leadership, cultural awareness, dispute mediation, civic communication, equipment utilization, and any other training necessary to achieve the goals set forth in Section 22809. And what we had been discussing at the board meeting regarding this particular issue was we were discussing the issue of doing an ad hoc committee to look at leadership development. In talking with Commissioner Schaefer and chit-chatting about it, we wanted to get some input from neighborhood councils first before we started talking about band-aiding leadership development or what it should look like. And so we're doing we kind of divided it up, but we're doing a letter or a request, and hopefully it'll be put on the Dunn website and also be sent out to boards to input back to us what they think would be a good leadership development program or how they think it should be handled. We wanted to get the information first before we did an ad hoc committee because we wanted to get input, be fair about what we were getting, and then maybe talk about doing an ad hoc committee. And so that's why we haven't formed an ad hoc committee. And I have just recently been working on a letter that we would like to send out to neighborhood councils to do some input and to have it sent back to us. We'll take that first because the next one is different. So that's what we're doing with it now. And we would possibly have public hearing at our, take more public
remarks at our board meetings and maybe even have a special meeting on leadership development and call it. We have to decide how we want to do that. I made a copy of remarks, and I think they're in the back of the room. I made some remarks. I did some remarks on, and I
but know. Everything is covered, so it's fine. It's the, whatever remarks were made are in the back of the room, so
okay.
I don't think
okay. So it's just kind of like we're starting to form a letter. Okay, so, you be back?
Yeah.
Oh, could we take a little break?
No, I just need to go to the restroom.
Huh?
I'm stepping out to the restroom, that's all.
All right. Oh, there's still four of us. Okay. Can we still take care of business, right? Yeah. Okay.
Can you check the audio, though? I heard it just went down.
But anyway, so did you have anybody have any remarks on number? Did everybody mistakenly get my email? It's in the back of the room. I wasn't supposed to send it to everybody. I meant to send it. Anyway, did everybody get it? So, you know, take a look and do some input on that. And in following in the same vein, just to kind of try to cover this all at once, 14 talks about a uniform process for censure and removal. We really wanted to put some authority behind our code of conduct. It's like we have a code of conduct, but we're not enforcing anything. And we want to send out some information on that. Lynn Schaefer has been ill, but he has some ideas on a code of conduct implementation of procedures, and we're going to be working on that also, but we don't have that today.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Commissioner, just a point of clarification. So did we have any comment for item 13? Was there any comment for item 13 before we get to 14?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I'm sorry,
so
is the discussion?
So for 13, we do 13 first, ask the leadership development, and that is Lydia. You're on here twice for the same item.
I should have 13 and 14.
For the leadership.
You do. You're on here. Okay. 14 too.
13.
So, yes, training is critical. I knew Gracie started smiling as soon as she saw me come up to the mic. We have horrible issues in our neighborhood councils because people are not being properly trained. Not only are they not following the rules themselves, but they are accusing other board members of breaking rules that don't exist because they don't even understand what the rules are. It's really important that people understand, and this has been one of the biggest issues, people do not fully understand the responsibility that they carry as a member of the neighborhood council system. Mm-hmm. They see this as an extension of the women's club or a club that they belong to. They think that spending money is all about. We had a board member send out a letter to the entire community and posted all over Facebook saying, here's the link if you want money from the neighborhood council. This is the kind of behavior that we're seeing because people do not understand. When the neighbor councils were put into play, and we talk about, like, for example, those funding trainings, we don't talk about the responsibility of that money having to be for the benefit of the entire community. It's not about handing out coats for the homeless for winter. While that's a lovely thought, that's not the purpose of our neighborhood council funds. We're not supposed to be giving gifts of public funds, and we are supposed to be benefiting the entire community. There are other organizations that money can be given to do those things. Also, as far as responsibility of self-responsibility, like you talked about the code of conduct, behavioral responsibility, these things are completely unacceptable. We have board members who, as audience members, we've had to call the police on many times. And yet now they join the board and they're still speaking out of turn and yelling out of turn. This stuff is unacceptable. The trainings that the department does, and I don't want to criticize the department because I know they have staffing issues, but everybody should have very concise levels of training that they need.
other comments on 13? I want to go back since Gracie is here, and we skipped the general manager's report. I don't know if you had a general manager's report or whether you just came in to say goodbye.
Hi, Gracie Liu, general manager for the Department of Neighbor Empowerment. I need to come by and say goodbye. I wanted to, sorry, I've been having, because I'm doing both roles right now over at personnel, and also here, so my meeting schedule is a bit crazy. So my apologies for not being here earlier. Had another meeting conflict. But what I wanted to do is provide an update. We are in the process of doing the interviews and selections for the new general manager for the Department of Empowerment. And I anticipate that the process will likely be completed, meaning mayor will select a candidate, and that candidate will be confirmed by city council. Likely in August, because City Council goes into recess for most of July, and so they won't be back in August. And I don't see how it will happen beforehand. But happily, I am able to continue in my general manager role in the meantime to make sure that the transition, when it does happen, is smooth. And so we right now are just focused on wrapping the fiscal year. So we are just making sure that all of our contracts, and thank you for approving the Public Allies contract, that those are being wrapped up and paid, and that we cumber any monies that we have left over for our, we know, print projects and some outreach projects for next fiscal year. So next year, in terms of funding, we did get, happily, $300,000 funding for the Office of Civic Engagement, which is to build the office, the foundation of it. And as I've mentioned in the past, Office of Engagement is really about educating city departments on what is great public engagement. We have been working with a CORO fellow and a UCLA policy student on interviewing all of the departments that have any type of public engagement and getting their processes and how they do it, who to contact, what they do, and consolidating that. And our goal is to make sure that that gets onto a platform, likely a website, so that the public can just go to one place to know everything about all the civic engagement efforts within the city without having to know how many city departments are out there and what they're doing. So that's part of all of the Office of Civic Engagement work, in addition to continuing with the great programs that we have, like Civic University, which will be starting in July. So if neighbor councils, if you haven't nominated your candidates, it'll be one man, one woman to come in, participate. Highly recommend that you guys do that and register. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, I have a question. No, I have a request. We talked earlier about procedures in elections and how things are certified or not certified, and how the clerk can certify. There may be an error or anything, something could come up, and maybe some would consider that the certification shouldn't have taken place. It gets bounced back to the department, according to the city clerk. It gets bounced back to the department to look at the issue. And so what kind of procedures are in place to look at certifications that may have been egregiously accepted?
So right now, so as
you can tell me now if you want, or you can write it out and give it to me later.
Oh, just very briefly, what we do is, like, the neighbor empowerment advocate who is in charge of that neighbor council will just look at the matter, and we'll work with the city clerk to gather information, and we'll resolve the matter with the neighbor council. That's pretty much how we do that. you know, city clerk is, they're very specific in terms of, you know, what they cover and when they're done and once they certify. That's pretty much the end of what they're supposed to do, and they turn everything else over to us. So sometimes they hold the information that we need in order to resolve any issues that might have happened with candidates. So we will work with them, but in terms of them doing any type of active investigation or anything, like that's not their role. That would be our role.
So it's sort of like electing President Trump. We just have to live with it. I mean, if you find out something, but and it's up to the board to, you know, look at the issue. But if they are supportive of the person that got elected illegally, they're going to stay there. So it's just there until the next election, in essence.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're referring to something specific, so I'm happy to take this offline with you to talk about that. It sounds like you're referring to something very specific, so I'm happy to talk to you offline about it. I think that, you know, sometimes allegations are made and you know, they're not necessarily supported by facts. So that's why I would just say, you know, let us take a look at the actual facts and not necessarily what was alleged because, you know, we often find there's a discrepancy between the two.
Any other questions with the general manager? How long are you going to be here?
I anticipate that I will be here into August. My understanding in terms of like the process, I believe like the mayor will likely have the opportunity to appoint the new general manager sometime in July, and then it has to be confirmed by city council, and since they'll be in recess, they don't come back until the first week of August.
So we'll wait till a little later to give you a nice goodbye.
It's never a goodbye. I'll still be hanging around. I'll try to tell people I'm a neighbor council nerd. You'll still see me.
No other questions for that? Oh, you just, okay, playing with your microphone. Okay. All right. Back to number 14, which was the ad hoc committee to consider policy establishing a uniform process for the censure and removal of neighborhood council board members. And as I mentioned before, I think Commissioner Lynn Schaefer was working on this. He had always been interested in the code of conduct in the first place and helped write that. And because many of us consider that it's not enforceable, he's also looking at the issue of enforcement, and thought the same thing that we thought on the leadership development, that we wanted to get some input from neighborhood councils first before we start writing up stuff and doing ad hoc committees and all that kind of stuff. And so that'll be that communication will be formulated also and hopefully put on the website so that people can give input into code of conducts and should it be in the bylaws and all that kind of stuff. And
Atkinson.
Yeah, I was just going to do that.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'll do commissioners first. So
I just wanted to make a quick reminder, Commissioner Vera Ramirez, of my last request, and that was to have the department calculate those neighborhood councils that do have a censure and removal process in their bylaws, because that's how it is enforceable, and those that don't, and if we could see what specific language is in those bylaws and compare them, so that way we can actually have something to look at and not just make up a suggested bylaws from the air.
Sure, that's fine. I'll make, John, if you can make note of that, we'll make sure that you have access to that. I would say about, 75% have something and 25% don't because they choose not to. So they'll say like intentionally left blank. We'll provide you those statistics and also, as well as the actual language.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Lippman, mm-hmm. I think, and to that point, you know, the purpose for this is to establish a uniform process.
Yep.
So there's consistency. So I think Commissioner Vo Ramirez's suggestion is very helpful. This has been on our agenda for multiple months at this point. I'd like to suggest that I'd like to move, and I would appreciate a second to actually form the ad hoc committee, and I will
volunteer to be on it if necessary. I know Len would, but I feel like it's now time to move this to an ad hoc discussion so that we can move this forward. So happy to keep it on the agenda too, but
Commissioner Regalado?
I think we're going to run into the fact that this is going to be extremely controversial across the board.
Which one?
Actually, I would imagine both of them, you know, and it's, and I think I heard it stated today that both of them would require a certain level of community or neighborhood council input. If I think that's what I heard.
Both would require what?
Input from the community, both items. I think I heard that there is going to be an opportunity for some, for individuals to put their input online or some mechanism of that type.
That's what I would like to see.
And I completely agree. I think that's one very important tool. But I would like to suggest that there is also an opportunity when we get out into the community that we hear it, we give the community the opportunity to actually say it publicly so that it can be on the record, because I'll be honest with you, I think we're going to hear a whole lot of different aspects of what this could be or should be, or the fact that some people are going to say, we don't want anything to do with it. So I think, you know, to eliminate the opportunity for someone to say, we weren't transparent, we weren't able to get the full feel of what the community wants, a public input should also be in the plan, in the works, to be able to have the community say something about it, and we take inventory on that level also.
I agree. That Commissioner Atkinson, that was the whole point of why we didn't do an ad hoc committee, because so many neighborhood councils say, oh, we do ad hoc committees, and then we sort of end up telling them what to do, even though we try to base it on public comment. They still see that. And so that's why in talking and discussing it back and forth, we felt that we wanted to get input first, form an ad hoc committee, and then say, look, here are some of the ideas that came from neighborhood councils. And we want to get it on the website, and we want to get it out in a letter and send it to boards, send it to neighborhood council boards to discuss the issue. And we still may not get everything we need to get, but at least we can say that we tried and that we didn't put something upon the neighborhood councils that they felt they were being put upon. So that's why I was reluctant to support an ad hoc committee where we come together and, you know, I know it means that we call hearings and all that kind of stuff, but I think we wanted to get the input first.
And, okay, I mean, maybe then the conversation happens at our agenda planning meeting, but I think this motion should be different, because the motion says discuss appointing an ad hoc committee. I think if we're actually going to be seeking feedback and getting feedback, then
it sort of is, but you have to get we want to get the input first.
Right.
So we should take ad hoc out maybe.
But if we're not going to, what I'm hearing is that we're not going to form an ad hoc committee because it's been criticized. So let's take that off. Like, let's pull that as an issue and just go with, these are our ideas.
Okay.
Let's start with, here's what we found so far. This is why this is another criticism we've heard is, this isn't a problem. Why are you working on this? So if we get back a report from the department saying, these are there are inconsistencies here. There are 25 neighborhood councils that have none, and it's...
We need to look at Commissioner Atkinson. We need to look at, even though it wasn't the most formal thing that I wrote, at least look at the remarks, because in the remarks that I have in the back of the room, I mentioned some of the issues that have come to us from neighborhood councils, and that these are some of the issues that we wanted to look at. I also mentioned in the remarks that we would like to look at best practices and what are neighborhood councils doing that work It's in those remarks.
Right.
And we can redo it and do it correctly and look at it again and put that on the website so people know that they can react to something. But we didn't want to put any rules out there and say, this is what we think we want to do. Let us know if that's what you want to do. Yeah, we want to get the input first. So look at what I sent you guys and then work on rewriting it and or adding what you think should be in it.
Okay.
And Lisa and City Attorney, just for the record, what was sent out is available to the,
in the back of the room.
Members here in the
Thank
back
you.
Of the room.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay. So any other remarks on 13 or 14?
No? Yes, there's a public comment on 14.
We got public comment?
Perhaps.
Okay.
May I make a suggestion that item 13 is going to be continued, or how is that, if we could deal with item 13 and then we could move on to 14 for clarification?
No, we don't. Lydia, you already did the on leadership and conflict resolution, didn't you?
Yes.
I did 13 for training.
And then we have general comments. Oh, on number 14. Okay. That is the
central room.
You sort of had already mentioned it, but okay. We do have, yeah, number 14 is discussion and possible regarding, discussion on ad hoc committee on code of conduct. Censure.
Just for the record, Elisa, so is item 13 going to be voted on, or is just a discussion for today?
So we did 13, had public comment on 13.
Right.
But so now we're on 14, which is a uniform process for censure.
So are you continuing 13? Is it?
Say that again.
Is it going to be continued to another agenda?
Yeah, it'll probably be. Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. But I didn't know whether you want to say something else about censure. You kind of already mentioned it.
No, I mentioned it. Public comment as personal, so I could bring it up during this session.
Okay. All right.
So is there you're just going to vote to continue item 13? Or there was a motion by Commissioner Lippman perhaps about wanting.
It didn't have a second.
Okay. So item 13 is going to be continued, or is...
So these items are... continued.
Right.
What we were commenting on is that it's continued, but that we also wanted to put out a letter asking for input from neighborhood council.
So would that be like a motion or?
Well, we've been talking about that though. Is that a continuous motion? I mean, we've been talking about that. You think that should be a formal motion that we will be sending out communication on leadership development and censure? And
I bet they're two different issues. So would you?
We should
like
do one at a time,
formal?
Actually.
But. I just think in terms of how the commission is going to determine how to continue on with it, to continue before an ad hoc is, just for clarity, before an ad hoc is formed.
Okay, so we wanted to get input before ad hoc, and we could put that in the letter that we wanted to get input. Before we formalize an ad hoc committee. So you're saying that's what we should make a motion on?
Just so there's some clarity, perhaps, for it. But is 13 going to continue?
Mr. Regalado.
Commissioner Regalado here. I think what I'm hearing is that there should be some type of action just to make sure that everyone knows that item 13 is carried over to the next agenda so that we can have further discussion based on whatever action is going to occur between now and the next agenda. Is that what I think you're saying?
So, and I'm trying to understand it. So in the interim, is it the intent to vote on whether or not there will be a letter, or has that been already decided?
Right.
I don't think so.
Right, because it's not to form the ad hoc. It is to do the letter. But we had already been commenting on that, but I guess you're right. I guess we didn't do a formal vote to actually do a communication to neighborhood councils on their input on forming, on doing leadership development, and but it's two different letters, and then a letter on censure.
May I suggest this is Commissioner Levin. May I suggest that on item 13, we add something to the agenda with formal language that we request the department to communicate through the newsletter and potentially even send out our own commission newsletter, which we haven't done in a while. I'm happy to write. And then on item 14, I think we should change, or I think we it should be focused more and less on the ad hoc committee and more on the report, right?
Okay.
We should actually formally have an agenda item on the agenda that says report back from the department on neighborhood council removal and censure policies. And that could be the next agenda or it can be the following one, depending on how quickly the department's able to produce that. And then we really have some follow-up. Rather, my frustration is that we just haven't moved on these in 2 months. So is that... It's not a motion, it's just something for us to take back to...
Well, actually, on number 13, which is discussion and possible action regarding training for neighborhood council board members, discussion may include creating policies. We actually didn't put the term ad hoc in that particular item this time. And so we could entertain a motion... Go ahead.
Commissioner Levin, I move that since it's the summer, that's not a motion. I move that during the summer months we hold some town halls, town hall focused meetings,
or
public hearings where we specifically take feedback on these two agenda items, that they're the real focus of the agenda items, and we make that clear to neighborhood councils throughout the summer, because it's quieter, supposedly. Is there any interest in that? Hearing none? Okay. I'm just...
Sounds all right.
Okay.
Nobody wants to second it?
If that's a motion, then I will second that.
Okay. I mean, I'm suggesting that these will be at our regularly scheduled meetings. We can still have other agenda items, but we frame these as town hall opportunities for neighborhood councils to engage. We've done this in the past, but it gives us more of a purpose than, you know, we don't have bylaws coming up right now. We don't have...
Just as long as we include that we're sending information out to neighborhood councils for their input into.
Of course.
That's not just a public hearing, but they can send it back, you know, in writing.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
So the motion would be, you want to repeat it one more time?
The motion is to hold at least two town hall meetings in the summer of 2019 regarding a training, a mandatory leadership and conflict resolution policy and a policy establishing a uniform process for the censure and removal of neighborhood council board members.
Right. So second?
Second.
Okay, so it's moved by Mr. Lippman and seconded by Mr. Regalado that we have some public hearings or town halls regarding leadership development and
uniform process.
Leadership development and conflict resolution. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Aye.
All right, so same thing for number 14, that we have some public hearings regarding a uniform process for censure
public comment
and removal of neighborhood council board members.
What I think it's this,
it's two different things. One's a little bit more, one has to do with the code of conduct. The first one does not have to do with the code of conduct.
Right.
It's just leadership development and.
Right. I think the town hall is on both, though. So.
Okay. But again, it's two separate. Again, I'm sorry. Again, it's two separate issues.
There's
so.
Separate
okay.
And so
well,
we,
then I move that we have. We also have.
Except that there was public comment, I believe, on item 14.
Good point. Yep. Go for it. Yes, you're right. Absolutely, Ms.
I believe there's public comment on it.
But I think we, and in our writing though, we wanted to include Commissioner Vo Romero's idea that we wanted to do get the information from the department on who actually has a code of conduct in their bylaws and how it's handled, I believe. So we have to be
right.
Sure.
So I guess then the motion would be that we request that the department report back on current neighborhood council censure and removal policies, and that we also include this in our town hall meeting, to at least two town hall meetings in the field for further feedback from neighborhood councils. That's the motion.
That's fine. I just want to make sure that if there's a public comment card
yes.
in that individual has an opportunity to speak if they wish to can still.
Well, that's the whole point of it.
Right.
That's the whole point. It's for public.
Did anyone want to second that or? No?
I'll second that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Did we get a second?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. I'm Lydia Grant, and this is a really huge issue. Some neighborhood councils don't have censure or removal clauses because previous boards did not want to be removed or censured, so they had them taken out of their bylaws. I am on a board that has no censure clause. And what has happened is we have not been getting the same advice across the board on how to deal with some of these situations. Some of them say that you can remove board members for things like attendance and things like that, but then suddenly you can't follow the bylaws because now you have to go to the city attorney. We've had situations, I'll give you two examples, Sylmar Neighbor Council and Sunland Tonga Neighbor Council. Both have had on their bylaws to remove somebody, but the advice that we've gotten from the department and from the city attorney's office have been different on both. So there's a problem, and it needs to be addressed. And there needs to be a way to remove people who are attacking fellow board members, such as in the example that I gave earlier. Right now, the process is so poor that to remove somebody, you fear even voting to remove somebody. When you have a situation where you have a balance of board members or more board members for that person, say they got on as part of a slate, then their slate board members won't vote them off no matter how heinous what they're doing is to other people. We have issues. There has to be a way, just on when it deals with like personnel issues, that they can have a closed meeting to discuss the issue. I'm not saying that that is the response, but there has to be some way to protect the board members from feeling unsafe about voting somebody off the board also. That's my opinion, and that may not happen, but I'm just trying to give you some examples of some of the issues that you guys are going to face, because this is a problem. And from what I'm hearing, this isn't one neighborhood council's problem. This is happening all across the city. It's happening everywhere. I didn't even know that. I just knew it was happening to us, and then I heard it was happening to a neighboring council. Then all of a sudden, we have people out at other community meetings across the city, and we're hearing it's all over the place. This is no longer acceptable. Something has to be done to fix this problem. It's not necessarily that the city attorney can remove somebody because they won't. It can't be that the department can remove somebody because they don't necessarily have the power to do so. So it can only fall on the neighbor councils, but the system has to be put in place to make sure that people are protected. The city has a responsibility to protect people. And if that isn't happening, and the neighborhood councils don't have the power to do it, then somebody else is going to have to step up and follow the law that's set by the state of California. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Are we ready to vote on this motion that Commissioner Lipman made, and it was seconded by Commissioner Regalado? So all in favor on having a public hearing on these issues, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Motion passed. Thank you, everybody. Number 15 is commission business, comments from commissioners on subject matters within the board's jurisdiction. Anybody have any comments on what they've been doing or any issues that they want to bring up for further discussion with the department? Nope. No? Okay. Well, I will accept a motion for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
It has been moved by Commissioner Vollmer-Mears, and you look like you were going to second it, so seconded by Mr. Lippman. Okay. Aye. Not even 4 o'clock.
What's that? Oh.
It's not even 4 o'clock. I never know if that clock is right because sometimes it stops.
No, I think you're right. I think it's right. Yeah, it is.
Let's see. What do I want to keep? I think I want to keep that.
Good seeing you.